All righty, this is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Herb Sendek is going to join us. He's the coach at Santa Clara University. He did coach Jalen Williams, who had a 40-point performance. 40-point performance in the NBA Finals in Game 5 to take a commanding 3-2 series lead. We'll see if the Thunder can close this baby out coming up on Thursday night. So Saturday, Stu is playing in the Deion Dawkins Charity Kickball Tournament with me. Hopefully you don't tear your patella tendon like EJ did last year. Now, you saw that on social media today. EJ, for the 9,000th time for an injury that happened a year ago, was talking about his injury, and he was tweeting about it. So I said, oh, do you want your redemption moment? We still have a spot left on the roster. And he goes, oh, I need to check with my doctor and see if that's allowed and if I got medical clearance. I'm not expecting him to go, to be fair. You tore your patella tendon stealing third base in a charity kickball tournament. I would not go and play in this charity kickball tournament ever again. I'm actually a little nervous going into this year just because EJ got hurt last year and we've talked about it. So now it's okay. Is there going to be some karma and is it just going to even out? And then I'm going to get hurt in this tournament. So I'm very concerned about that. But Anthony Gallo, who does a great job behind the scenes for our digital department, he is playing in this tournament. And I didn't know this, Stu, but your girlfriend's coming. And Gallo's
Hopefully, most likely coming.
Okay. So that's not a definite.
It's most likely.
Okay. Yeah. If she doesn't show up, she doesn't show up. That's fine. But Gallo made it clear to me that his girlfriend was coming. So I said, oh, maybe I should bring some donuts because last time, or the only time I met Gallo's girlfriend, you, Marash, and Hickey were not nice to Gallo.
This is true.
Because there were donuts in the newsroom, and you guys kept on walking up in front of him while his girlfriend was there. Oh, Gallo, how many donuts you have? Is that your second or third donut of the day? And I guess Gallo was telling me that his girlfriend has really been on him for probably like 2 years. Well, that doesn't sound right. His girlfriend was really on him. That could also be true. But I meant his girlfriend was really on him in terms of losing some weight. So I guess she's called him fat a few times, which is not a nice thing to do, but she, you know, they have a happy relationship, I guess.
She's not a liar.
That's not nice. I think Gallo's actually looking pretty good these days. I wouldn't call Gallo fat. That's just me, though. And also his mother makes pinoli. This is going to be a fat comment by me. His mother makes pinoli cookies, and there's a chance she's coming to the charity kickball game, and she may hand deliver me pinoli cookies, which I would absolutely love. Well, anyway, Gallo revealed to me during the break that his girlfriend has called him fat before, and he said, don't call me fat, just call me tubby if you're mad at me. So I don't know. That doesn't sit right with me. If you're in an argument about someone didn't clean the dishes or maybe Gallo's just playing Xbox with Stu and not paying attention to his girlfriend, if his girlfriend's first line is, hey, tubby, oh, why do you call him tubby? Because he doesn't like when I call him fat and tubby was acceptable. I'm very now intrigued to see the dynamics of Gallo's girlfriend and Gallo at the charity kickball tournament. If he flies out to left field, all right, nice job, tubby. So I am inclined, Stu, to bring now two boxes of donuts and go, here you go, tubby. But then if Gallo's mother's there, I won't call him tubby because that would just be disrespectful. So I guess that's – did you know that Gallo's girlfriend calls him tubby?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've heard that one once or twice.
So maybe. If you guys go out for dinner and he orders chicken parm, she goes, oh, way to go. Packing on those calories, yeah, tubby.
I could see her doing
Tubbs,
that.
Tubby. Oh, that's not nice. Not nice, not nice, not nice, not nice. Anyway, let's get to overreaction or proper reaction, Stu. Your girlfriend calling you tubby is healthy for a relationship.
I think it could be a proper reaction. I don't think if Angie called me tubby, I would laugh at it probably.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I would say easy overreaction.
Really?
That's just me. If someone's calling me tubby, and that's what they're using, I think that's a malicious thing. Now, maybe there could be some truth behind it. I'm not ignoring that fact. But I don't know. That's supposed to be your partner. I'm not saying there can't be some nature, good fun ribbing right that goes on. But to just habitually call him tubby and Tubbs as if it's some nickname, I don't know. Gallo may now be Tubbs. We may just call him Tubbs.
No.
Hey, what's up, Tubbs? What's up, Biggs? What's up, Teletubby?
Pico de Tubby?
Yeah, Pico de Tubby. Alrighty, let's get to a little... How did you spell overreaction, proper reaction on this rundown today?
There's a silent B in overreaction.
I'm looking
I don't know
at
how you've never known this.
Overreaction. Let's get to overreaction, proper reaction right here on the Zach Gelb show. You know, we'll just take the B out of there. I guess they put the B in overreaction. Go ahead.
Another football week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team. Which takes are truly crazy?
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying? No.
And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach lets you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
All right, what do we got cooking today, boys?
All right, so Jaguars general manager James Gladstone joined SiriusXM today and was confident that Travis Hunter can play both ways.
Time will truly tell, and I think the thing that you can, in fact, lean into at this stage is he does not tire. He has got a spark. He has got the energy, the capacity from a physical standpoint just to be able to do it is certainly there. It'll be in terms of one game to the next. Where does it fit? Where does it make the most sense? Certain game plans might dictate usage differently. So time will truly tell, and I don't know that one game to the next is going to be the exact same, but putting a number on it at this stage is, I think, probably premature. But look forward to seeing how it really plays itself out here and him earning his spot on both sides.
James Gladstone sounds like Ian Begley, NBA reporter for SNY here in New York. I thought that was a Begley cut there for a second, but it was James Gladstone. Anyway, Stu, continue the question.
So Hunter averaged an insane 115 snaps per game last year at Colorado, but the most average snaps by an NFL wide receiver was Keenan Allen at 57 per game, and by cornerback, it was Stephon Gilmore who had 58 per game.
Oh, boy.
Overreaction or proper reaction, Hunter will average over 80 snaps a game as a rookie.
I'm going to say overreaction. I think he's just going to come up just short of that. I think it's going to be more in the 70s is what I will say. So I'll go overreaction when you ask me, will Hunter average over 80 snaps a game as a rookie?
The Cleveland Browns have four quarterbacks in camp after signing Joe Flacco and trading for Kenny Pickett, as well as drafting both Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders. While many have speculated which of the four will get cut, Browns insider Mary Kay Cabot says that they could actually keep all four since they combined for less than $8 million against the cap.
Oh, boy.
Overreaction or proper reaction, the Browns should keep all four quarterbacks.
Here we go, Brownies. Here we go. Oh, no. Four is too many. I think the quarterback competition is Flacco and Pickett. That's the start. And then you have Gabriel and Shedeur competing for second and third string. Whoever doesn't get the job between Flacco and Pickett, I think they do end up getting rid of via trade or cutting. So you asked me the Browns should keep all four quarterbacks. I'm going overreaction. I'm only keeping three.
49ers tight end George Kittle signed a monster four-year, $76 million extension this offseason, but apparently doesn't think that that's enough. Kittle joined Dan Patrick and explained he's working to get tight ends more money.
The only way for the tight end market to continue to grow is if everybody's getting paid. That's the only way to do it. Like, you can't just have one guy do it and then it just sits for 3 or 4 years because then you're stuck and it's stagnant. No one's getting paid. So we want everybody, like I want everybody to have great seasons. I want guys to get paid to keep bumping up that market. So by the time that, you know, Brock Bowers is doing his contract in 3 years, he's going for over $20 million, which he will. And that's just the whole point. You know, when tight end you first started, I think top of the market was 15 and now we're almost at 20. So like we're continually growing it. And, you know, as a tight end and as a position who does everything, yeah, I think we should be making more money, but we're working on it.
So right now, Kittle leads all tight ends with $19.1 million per year, which is the lowest average of any offensive position right now, as Saquon makes over $20 million per year. Overreaction or proper reaction, top tight end should be getting paid closer to $30 million a year.
It's almost as if you were a tight end, you'd be better off just picking wide receiver or offensive lineman. Because if you're an elite offensive tackle, you get paid a ridiculous amount of money. If you're an elite wide receiver, you get paid $40 million a year or whatever it is now. So I think it's almost better to just pick. That's the problem. Because a traditional tight end, right, blocks and catches the football. I think the way that you could see a tight end get a ridiculous amount of money is if he's used kind of as a bigger slot receiver now and doesn't do as much blocking. And that's a guy that if he's up to be a free agent at 26, 27, that's a guy that could really go cash in. But I think there aren't enough great tight ends for that to be the price. So the top tight end should be getting paid closer to $30 million a year. I'm not there yet. I'm not personally. So I'll end up going overreaction, especially when you have to allocate the money to the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and also your star offensive lineman.
Michigan had a rough first year under Sherrone Moore, mostly due to awful quarterback play. But now Michigan is swimming in quarterback talent, including number one overall recruit Bryce Underwood, and now landing former four-star quarterback Jake Garcia as a transfer from East Carolina. The Wolverines' defense did take a hit, however, losing four stars in the first three rounds of the NFL draft. Overreaction or proper reaction, Michigan will contend for the Big Ten title this year.
Oh, boy. Penn State's going to be really good. Oregon under Lanning. I know that they just got to the Big Ten last year, but they won the Big Ten championship in their first year. Ohio State, we know, just has a bunch of talent. I think they can, you know, I'm going to say that's an overreaction. I think they lost a lot on defense. You look at what they lost on defense this past year. Mason Graham, Will Johnson, Josiah Stewart, Kenneth Grant, and we're going to see when they'll eventually play Bryce Underwood. And you also lost Kalel Mullings. I think that's a lot to lose, especially what they lost in, you factor in the last 2 years with guys like Blake Corum. You've also lost Donovan Edwards, Mikey Sanders still. You go on and on. That's a lot of talent to lose. So I think they're going to be good. But do I expect them to be the Big Ten championship game? No. So I'll end up going overreaction for that. I think they'll be a good team, just not a great team this year.
After sending Spencer Rattler to the NFL, South Carolina now has another star in Lenore Sellers under center, though they almost lost him. Sellers' father told The Athletic that an unnamed school offered them a two-year, $8 million deal to transfer.
Oh,
but Lenore said, quote, "I've been playing football all of my life for free. I've built relationships here. I have family here. There's no reason for me to go somewhere else and start over." End of quote. Overreaction or proper reaction, Sellers made a mistake staying at South Carolina rather than going to a better program.
I guess it depends where he was getting offered. If you're getting offered at, let's say, Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, then I think you should go. But it depends. If it was just a little bit of a better move, then I wouldn't be saying that. So you asked me, Sellers made a mistake by staying at South Carolina rather than going to a better program. I'm going to assume if you're offering 2 years, $8 million, it's an elite program. So I like Lenore Sellers a lot. I like Shane Beamer a lot. I'm happy that they're staying together as a duo. But I do think that is a proper reaction the way that you worded it.
As we discussed last hour, Vanderbilt quarterback Diego Pavia joined Bussin' with the Boys and made headlines when he shaded the Big Ten.
Was there a dollar amount that you heard that was like, holy?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm supposed to share, but like anywhere from like 4 to 4.5.
To leave and go somewhere
to
else.
To leave.
What conference?
SEC.
Any Big Ten teams trying to get you?
You want to play with the best. You don't want to play with the Big Ten.
Some cats, man.
You ignore those
the
calls.
The last two national titles.
I know.
Your era.
You ignore
your era.
Those calls. You know that. The Big Ten, you have like Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, Penn State. So like you really only have four games a year. Like the SEC, it's like week after week after. Like you're going to get beat on. Like the Big Ten, you ain't going to get beat on with like the Purdue, Nebraska.
You can nod all you want. Like that's a bullshit comment.
However, Pavia also made another bold claim about his current school.
Vanderbilt's going to run Tennessee after this year. Like, this is going to be the new staple of, like, college football is going to happen here at Vanderbilt. Everyone wants to come to Tennessee because of Nashville. So they want to come to Nashville, so Vanderbilt. And then when we have, like, the most money in NIL, like, why not come here? So, like, we literally just have to win this year and throughout the rest of the year. It'll take care of itself.
Huh. Yeah, just do that.
Overreaction or proper reaction, Vanderbilt can build and maintain a consistent SEC contending program.
When James Franklin was there, his last years on the job, they were 9-4, 9-4. Since then, Derek Mason was 3-9, 4-8, 6-7, 5-7, 6-7, 3-9, and they were 0-9. and he got fired. One of those games, Temple actually went to Vanderbilt and beat Vanderbilt. I was on the call for it. So it shows you how bad Vanderbilt was. Clark Lee took over. 2-10, 5-7, 2-10, and everyone thought he was going to get fired. And then they did go 7-6. It's one thing to go 7-6. Then it's another thing to say that Vandy can build and maintain a consistent SEC contending program. Now, there's attractions to go to Vanderbilt now, and if they have the money and right, you're right in Nashville, that's awesome. You could be better, but be a consistent SEC contending program? Go win double-digit games first. When was the last time Vanderbilt won double-digit games? I'm looking at this, looking at this, looking at this, looking at this. Have they ever won double-digit games of football? Put it this way. I just scrolled down on this list, and I am in 1960. It's 1968, and I don't see anything. So go in double digits first before we talk about them being a consistent contender in the SEC. So Vandy can build and maintain a consistent SEC contending program. I'm going overreaction. All right, that's overreaction, proper reaction. The Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Jalen Williams is the star of the NBA Finals last night. He had 40 points. His college coach was Herb Sendek at Santa Clara University. And we're going to hear that story, how he went from no Power 5 college offers to a three-star recruit to the 12th pick in the 2022 NBA draft to now dropping 40 points and being one of the better players in the NBA. We'll talk more about that great story with Jalen Williams next with Herb Sendek. The Oklahoma City Thunder are one win away from hoisting a Larry O'Brien trophy. Last night, they won their 63rd game of the season by double digits, which is just a stupid good number. They have 83 wins on the season. A big reason why they won that game and a lot of these games this year has been Jalen Williams, who was cooking last night once again. He had 40 points in a Game 5 in NBA Finals to put his team one win away from winning the championship. And his story is unbelievable. From zero Power 5 college offers, ended up being a three-star recruit, goes to Santa Clara, and right, just the story of him being the 12th overall pick in the 2022 draft is really cool. Now he's, right, the Robin to the Batman in Oklahoma City, and they are one win away from winning the title. Let's get a little bit about the origins of this story with the head men's basketball coach at Santa Clara University, and that, of course, is Herb Sendek, who's kind enough to join us right now. Coach, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for giving us a few minutes.
That's my pleasure. Great to be together with you.
Yeah, so let me start you off. You're watching your former college player last night. You know what he's been able to do in the NBA. But when he drops 40 points in an NBA Finals game to put his team up 3-2, how do you just process that?
Yeah, it was obviously a tremendous amount of fun to watch. I was sitting in our living room together with my wife, Melanie, and we were cheering as if we were courtside at the game. And then the text started coming in from different members of our Santa Clara University community, and they've continued to roll in all through today. And so I think our entire university community right now just has tremendous pride and is really enjoying seeing Jalen succeed at the level that he is.
And I love a story like that, right? Because he didn't go to one of these big programs. He ends up being no Power 5 offers. Like I said, a three-star recruit. And here he is on one of these all-time great teams. So let me ask you, going back a few years now, how did he originally get on your radar? How did you originally discover Jalen Williams?
Well, I think it was during his sophomore year in high school that a member of our staff, Jason Ludwig, identified him as a promising young prospect. So we started following him. And then as he got into his junior year, we started recruiting him. And from then, just kind of stayed with the process. And ultimately, he chose to come to Santa Clara. But Jason did a great job early on identifying him as somebody that would really fit our program. And then we were fortunate to be able to get him to choose us.
Now, tell me the story. I was reading it on Anscape earlier with the glasses and the Jay Drip nickname that you ended up giving him.
Yeah, I mean, like early on, it was obvious he had a flair for fashion. He is a big personality. He loves life. He never has a bad day. And so one time when I went to see him, he was rocking these sunglasses with white rims, and they look pretty good, actually. And so the next time I went to see him, I, too, was wearing the same sunglasses. And so, that's kind of stayed with us through the years. as we've gone back and forth, him making fun of my fashion and me always recognizing his elite fashion all the way to the Paris Fashion Show.
Now, I'm from Long Island. I didn't realize that he was also considering Hofstra, and it was pretty close between you guys and Hofstra. Obviously, good for you guys that you got him there, and look at the career that he's gone on to have. When you had the build-up to his announcement and where he was deciding to go, how nervous was it? And you start to realize, man, this guy can be really special, and maybe we do have one of these uncut gems here.
Yeah, no, we were thrilled when he decided to come with us. We really were. And, you know, we knew he was going to be a tremendous fit for us and an outstanding player. And so anytime you are able to finally get a commitment from a player that you've been recruiting for that period of time, it's always a celebratory moment.
Why was he, Coach, so under-recruited when you look back at this process, in your opinion?
I don't have an answer to that question. You know, we recruit guys who we think can play anywhere and who have bright futures in the game. And we were convinced that Jalen was special. Now, could I have predicted he was going to score 40 points in game 5 of an NBA Finals 3 years into his NBA career? You know, probably not. But we knew he was going to be a very, very good basketball player in college and beyond.
So obviously you guys thought he always had the potential, maybe not to this level, but was there a moment through his college career where you said, okay, this is not only going to be a guy that's special, but he's going to be really, really special?
Well, I think there were, you know, it was a buildup over time. It wasn't just, you know, like one moment or one play or one practice or game. You could just see it building, you know, as he made progress through his first year. His second year was a tortured year because it was COVID, and our season was an aberration in every conceivable way. And so it's almost unfair to overthink or put too much stock into what he did or didn't do that year. And then he came back his junior year, and I would say early on in the non-conference season, you know, we would look at each other in staff meetings and say, this guy's not going to be with us after this year.
Ah, it's an unbelievable story. You know, you look back at it now in this NIL and transfer portal era. Clearly, he valued the relationship that he built with you, and you guys did such a great job at building those relationships. It still kind of shows you that relationships still mean so much in the game of college basketball and all college sports.
They do, and it's the most important thing. And it's the most important thing in life. And it's hard to think of any endeavor that that isn't made better by the presence and the community with others.
Coach Herb Sendek here with us for a few more minutes. Jalen Williams, his player from college, had 40 points last night. Thunder are one win away from winning an NBA championship. Does a great job, obviously, as the head basketball coach at Santa Clara. You got a chance when you're at Arizona State to coach James Harden. Just how do you kind of compare coaching James to Jalen?
See, that's something I would never do. I would never compare. You know, that's a unproductive exercise. And, you know, I think we tend to do too much of that. And I think what would be a better exercise is just to enjoy the uniqueness of each player, of each person, and allow them their own space to be who they are. And so I, you know, no different than a parent with more than one kid, right?
Who's the favorite child, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to get into comparisons, because when you compare, you almost necessarily unintentionally diminish one when you elevate the other in some regard. And I just find great beauty in allowing each of them and all of our guys to be uniquely themselves.
So what made, let me ask you then this way, what made James so unique looking back at it, and what made Jalen so unique looking back at it?
I mean, I just think each of them had their own path, their own personality. Their games have, you know, evolved according to their own skill sets and opportunities. They just have their own unique paths, both absolutely great in their own way, in their own regard, but uniquely themselves.
It's got to be surreal because you look at James, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, right? And he won an MVP in this league and also started his career with Oklahoma City. And now you see Jalen, what he's gone on to do. And that team, right, one more victory, they get a championship, and he had 40 points in NBA Finals. Knowing those guys from the beginning, I know, right, you're in the college business, right, you've had successful players before, but it's got to be pretty neat when you just say, okay, James Harden, MVP of the NBA, and Jalen Williams now a guy that had 40 points in NBA Finals game.
Yeah, no, it really is amazing. And those guys deserve all the credit, and I couldn't be happier for their successes, you know. And it is tremendously fulfilling for a coach, a teacher, a parent to watch the evolution and development, the growth of young people. And in these two particular cases, you know, worldwide attention is being showered on their development. But you think back like it was just yesterday when you were going to see them playing in a high school game or a club basketball game in the summer. And you can recall fondly the first day they arrive on campus as a freshman. And now you fast forward to these kinds of epic moments on the biggest stage in basketball.
The early parts of Jalen Williams, when you watch him in high school, what did those games look like? Just wondering, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, right away it was obvious to us, like he had a really, really high basketball IQ, a great feel for the game. He also had a good skill set, and you could just tell. I mean, he hadn't caught up to his body yet, and his body wasn't finished growing and maturing. And we just felt like once that happened, right, these other things that we were seeing and noticing would really blossom and begin to impact the game at even greater levels. And so... Yeah, you could just see. I mean, he had a lot of really amazing attributes, tremendous potential, and it just took time to develop those, some natural maturation. And even since he started in the NBA 3 years ago, he just improves every step of the way, you know. And last night we saw another breakthrough for him.
Before we let you run, so I'm going to the draft next week. Through NBA experiences, they sent me, you know, the last few years, and it's an awesome time, and they put you right on the floor, and you get to see all the college coaches with their players and their families. When you go back to reliving that night in 2022 when he was the 12th overall pick in the NBA draft, just what do you recall from that time?
Yeah, just I felt a tremendous amount of gratitude to be able to be there and share that moment with Jalen and his family. Jalen has absolutely a wonderful, beautiful, amazing family. His parents, you know, are incredible. They have to share so much in this success story. Jalen would be the first to tell you that. You know, their parenting helped propel him in ways that are impossible to measure. So to be there, to be a part of that special moment, I just feel, you know, a heart full of gratitude. Gives you chill bumps.
You know, one more thing, just looking at what Jalen's been able to do. It's one thing to be a great player in this league, and then it's another thing to be a great player that's also clutch. Was that clutch gene something that was always evident to you? Because that 40 points in an NBA Finals game, that's as clutch as it could be, especially with some of those moments that he had late in the game when it started to get a little bit tight.
Yeah, I mean, I immediately think back to his game winner against BYU, other clutch moments he had for us. Jalen is very even keel when it comes to performance. Doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. And like I said earlier, he doesn't have a bad day. He might have a moment like all of us, but he's a happy person and he finds joy in the process. He's a positive person, so he's going to see the glass always as being not half full, but three quarters full. And as a result, he's able to, I think, really navigate pressure situations well because he has a bedrock of belief in himself, right? He's confident and he just able to stay in the moment without, once again, getting too high or too low.
He's the head basketball coach at Santa Clara. That, of course, is Herb Sendek, kind enough to join us the day after one of his college players, former college players, Jalen Williams, lit up the NBA Finals in a Game 5, putting the Thunder up 3-2 with the 40-point performance. Coach, good luck this upcoming season. We appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure. All the best, guys. Thank you.
You got it. There he is, Coach Herb Sendek, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Appreciate him carving out some time for us. We got one more segment to play and one more segment to get to. Stanley Cup Final. It could be over tonight with the Stanley Cup in the building. We'll take a look at that when we come on back. Update time first. Here's Zach. You know, Samter has become pretty damn good at these pie charts. Just creating pie charts for our graphics. Like, I give him the topic, I give him the number, but he does a good job in creating these pie charts. So we've put out 4 pie charts, and I think the earliest pie chart we did was Aaron Rodgers. We did where will Aaron Rodgers land, where will Shedeur Sanders land, we did a pie chart on who will be the next Knicks coach, and where will Giannis be game one of the NBA season. So the Giannis one's still pending, but I put it still being in Milwaukee. That's not a crazy prediction. The Knicks coach, the other day I did 27% Mike Brown being the leader, and that's still pending. But Shedeur and Aaron Rodgers, we hit. I put it a 65% chance back in March that Aaron Rodgers is going to be on the Steelers. And then also in March, before the NFL draft, I had it as a 38% chance as the leading vote getter that the Cleveland Browns would land Shedeur Sanders. So we are 2 for 2 on the pie charts, and then we have 2 that we have to wait and see. So for the Knicks coaching search, I had Mike Brown at 27, Johnny Bryan at 26, Jason Kidd at 23, Taylor Jenkins at 18, Michael Malone at 4, and a mystery name in at 2. If I had to redo that, I would still probably make Mike Brown the favorite. Then I'd probably put I'd swap Taylor Jenkins and Johnny Bryan. So I put Taylor Jenkins at 26% and Johnny Bryan at 18% and keep Jason Kidd at 23%. But it's the initial pie chart. We make one pie chart and we see if it ends up working. So the reason I bring this up is I was just sent an article from my buddy Jeff. The latest odds for the Knicks head coach. At 30-1, Jeff Van Gundy. At 25-1, John Calipari. Also at 25-1, you have Steve Nash, Rick Brunson, and Mike Budenholzer. James Borrego is at 22-1. Mike Malone is at plus 500. Johnny Bryan is at plus 400. Taylor Jenkins is at plus 175. And I guess Vegas is following the Zach Gelb pie chart because Mike Brown right now is the odds-on favorite to land the Knicks job at plus 125. Now, I noticed one thing there. Chris Persianen, who joined us yesterday, who now may be the new Zach Gelb Infinity Sports Network NBA insider or NBA analyst. You know, we love to use Bill Ryder, who works here for the network. We, of course, love to use guys like Antonio Daniels, whoever he comes on, he's awesome. Robert Ori, we've developed a good relationship with. Always like when we get to talk to Big Game Rob, Big Shot Bob, whatever they call him. Big Shot Bob, right? Yeah. And Stu's like, hey, I remember a few of those shots. And then who else? I like Jared Greenberg. He's good. The dude over at NBA, Termini, Justin Termini, he's awesome. Anytime you get a nice solo on, I like talking to Frank Isola too. Kendrick Perkins used to be our guy, but now he's too big time for us. So there's a lot of guys that we use, but I think Persianen, we could use him whenever. And he said yesterday that something to keep an eye on, that there could be someone circling right in the water, that the Knicks supposedly have this interest in a Big 12 coach. And I guessed on the air, I said, oh, is it Bill Self? He said, no. And then he said something in a very particular wording. He goes, it's not any one of the Cougar coaches. So the Houston Cougars play in the Big 12. And then Kevin Young, who has NBA coaching experience, he also coaches in the Big 12 as he's at BYU right now. And he was just recently on the Sun staff and then also the Sixers staff before he ended up taking this BYU job. So that wasn't that. But there's family relationships, of course, there too. So I'm not expecting him actually to leave. So I'm really curious who this Big 12 coach is that Percy Einem was speculating the other day. Let me just go through it real quickly. So he said it wasn't Sampson. It wasn't Young. You know, it wasn't Bill Self. Could it be Scott Drew? Scott Drew doesn't come off to me as an NBA coach, if I'm just being honest. I don't think it's Jerome Tang over at TCU. It wasn't Hurley, Bobby Hurley at Arizona State. You know what? I'll throw a dart here on the board. We throw in a lot. Could it be Tommy Lloyd or could it be TJ Otzenberger? I'm going to say that name really quickly because I never get that name right. Over at Iowa State. You know, could it be? Potentially? Who knows? But yeah, that was just something that Percy Annan threw out to us yesterday. And we couldn't get him to crack on who the actual name was. But good information by Chris Percy Annan. I see him all over the place today. What is it called, that one aggregating NBA account, Stu? The big one?
NBA Centel?
Yeah, Centel. They had him over some story today. He was all over the place. I don't remember what the exact story was. His name is so difficult to type in. Percy Einen.
Centel is the fake one. Central is the real one. NBA Central.
Oh, it's NBA. Wait.
NBA Central is a real one. NBA Central is a fake account that trolls people and gets people for fake. You know, like a fake Adam Schefter.
Oh, okay.
You got Centel'd, meaning that you believed a fake story. Fake one.
I think I always call it Centel either way. But yes, I've just been calling it Centel the other time. He was on the legitimate one, Percy Einen. Or I think he was on the legitimate one. Find out what the story that he had today. I'm trying to type his name in, but it's too many words here. But you know what? Chris, we can have you on as our NBA insider. You need to change your name. Or maybe we just call him KP. Wojnarowski is Woj. No one says Sharania when they talk about Shams, just Shams. We'll get a little KP. That's all we'll do for Percy Annan. We'll just call him KP. But anyway, Stanley Cup final. Whenever you find the information, if you can find it, just interrupt me in the next 5 minutes. And if you can't find it, then hey, we only got 5 minutes left in the show and then we forget about it. But yeah, Stanley Cup final tonight, game six. We had Eddie Olczyk on early in the show. He was phenomenal with us. And I'm watching tonight. Here's what you watch for in the Stanley Cup final tonight. Does Eddie Olczyk mention us? Because I asked him, do you think Brad Marchand now wins the Conn Smythe? And he goes, well, I still think it's going to be Sam Bennett. But even going back to last year when they gave it to McDavid, and right, you could make the case it could have been Bobrovsky. Remember, the Conn Smythe's for the entirety of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So you had McDavid become the first non-winner of the Stanley Cup final to win the Conn Smythe. Since you had John Sebastian Giguere, or however you say his last name, with the Ducks. I think that was in 2003. So Edzo made the case with us that they should give a Wayne Gretzky Award, which is just an MVP for the Stanley Cup Final, which I don't think is a terrible idea. And then you could give maybe the Conn Smythe this year to Sam Bennett for the entirety of the playoffs, and then Brad Marchand, who has 6 goals in the Stanley Cup Final, he could get that as well. But that's not where it's at. But Edzo said that he'll mention that today in the broadcast, and he said maybe I'll end up mentioning you in the broadcast as well. Imagine you get Kenny Albert and Bush, and you get Edzo, and they're talking about it, and you get a nice little Zach Gelb pop. Now, that's why we talk about hockey here, folks. That's why we talk about hockey. I actually may run into the commissioner of the NHL, potentially, at some point in the summer. I won't say where. But somewhere where I do go during the summer, I found out that the commissioner of the NHL has bought a house there. And that has been making the way around the neighborhood. So maybe I end up seeing the commissioner and I say, hey, Edzo had this idea. What do you think? By the way, great to see you, commissioner. Did we find the central tweet from
yes.
Percy Annan?
It was that the Raptors are expected to show interest in Malik Monk if they fail to land Kevin Durant.
Now, that's an NBA insider. He's giving you Malik Monk news. So if they fail to land Kevin Durant?
Yes.
The Raptors?
The Raptors. Toronto Raptors, yes.
Huh? They're in the market for Kevin Durant? Read me that tweet again.
The Toronto Raptors are expected to show interest in Malik Monk if they fail to land Kevin Durant.
That's a very specific report. That sounds like an NBA insider right there. That's KP, not Chris Percy Einen, because his name's too difficult. So Malik Monk could be going from the Kings to the Raptors if that's the backup plan if they don't land Kevin Durant. That's a very specific report there. Anyway, thanks to watch tonight for the Stanley Cup Final. What version of Stuart Skinner are you going to get? Because he's going to be starting tonight. They announced that earlier this morning. It was talked about earlier this morning. So Stuart Skinner is going to be in goal tonight. What version do you get there? And then I kind of think our guy Carter Verhaeghe has a big goal. He usually has big goals in these clinching moments. I think he gets one tonight. And then the other thing is, Last year, you saw the Oilers come back from down 3-0, and they ended up losing in Game 7. We also saw the Florida Panthers, right, who were up 3-0, lose 3 in a row. So is there a heightened awareness by the Panthers to get the job done tonight, also in front of their home fans, which they did last year. They got it done in Game 7 in front of their home fans. So you don't have to go through what you kind of went through last year was, oh, are they letting it slip away? Now, I think it's different circumstances, but I think in a way that actually favors the Florida Panthers. I would not be, obviously wouldn't be shocked if there's a Game 7. It's taken the Oilers, though, both victories in this Stanley Cup final to happen in overtime. It shows you how tough it is to beat Florida. I'm not picking against Florida tonight. And then tomorrow, if McDavid doesn't win the Cup final and doesn't extend it, at least get to Game 7, then you know what the conversation is going to be. You're left in the contract. Does he stay? And also, we'll be doing a lot of Aaron Judge, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson type of topics where they're great players, but they don't have that ring. And then I'm sure LeBron James will listen to the show and then tweet us and say that that's a lot of weird talk, to talk about people that don't have rings and actually bring it up, and him actually thinking that he actually cares about AI and Charles Barkley and believe all of us and thinks we're all a bunch of idiots, that that's what that's really about. Oh, yeah, Nash doesn't have a ring. It's weird how people talk. How do people talk negatively about Steve Nash? Give me a break. It's because you get annoyed and your feelings all hurt that you have four rings, which is incredible, and MJ has six, and that's why you're annoyed that people say MJ is the greatest basketball player of all time. But I'm not doing that argument. I'm just commenting. Fun show today. Big thanks to Eddie Olczyk for joining us. Big thanks to Herb Sendek. Big thanks to Stu, Samter, Ack, and each and every one of you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.